Penguin Random House Audio presents Red Traitor by Owen Matthews. Read for you by Mark Bramhall. Prologue. Arkhipov. Severomorsk Naval Base, headquarters of the Red Banner Northern Fleet of the USSR. Dawn, 4 July 1962.
Breathe. Breathe, Vasily.
Captain First Class Vasily Arkhipov fought his way out of his nightmare like a drowning swimmer struggling for the surface. Gasping down air, he forced his eyes open. Pale Arctic summer sunlight streamed through the thin curtains. He flexed his hands, cramped from clutching the damp sheets tangled around his body. He inhaled slowly. No submarine stink here. No smell of unwashed men and strong tobacco. No taste of sweet navy tea in his mouth. No tang of molten solder, polymer sealant, hot oil, battery and reactor coolant fumes choking your nose. No invisible poison in this air. Arkhipov leaned over, fumbled for his watch, squinted to focus on the luminous dial. He followed the second hand as it ticked toward 0515. 1 year and 1 hour precisely since the reactor accident. Eons had passed since that distant and only half-remembered horror, but there were times, more or less every night, that Arkhipov refused to take the knockout pills the docs had given him, when he was still in the middle of it, time snagging back on itself and entangling him like seaweed. It never felt like a nightmare, not really. Rather, Arkhipov had the sensation of waking in a parallel and absolutely real world, located somewhere on the other side of sleep. A clamoring place of panic and screams. A familiar place of mayhem, steam heat and fear, stuck on an endless loop like a scratched record. In Arkhipov's waking world, the dead were invisible, but he knew they were not absent. His restless dead were always present, always busily locked in their agonies, always ready to come and assert their claims. The clock in the control room of Northern Fleet Submarine K-19 had been electronic. It purred rather than ticked, the hands sliding over the minutes and hours smoothly, watch after watch. Arkhipov's dream always began in that last moment of calm. The eerie silence of K-19, its futuristic smell, the metallic odor of the new instruments in their smooth, green-painted steel cabinets full of dials, glowing like a thousand eyes. And the quiet of the ship, instead of the continuous headache-making thud of a diesel engine, K-19's brand-new nuclear reactor emitted a low thrum, deep and powerful. The Soviet Navy's newest missile submarine cruised 90 meters below the surface of the North Atlantic as smoothly and quietly as a spaceship. He would try to will that sliding second hand to stop. Arkhipov always knew what was coming, but was powerless to speak, to warn the comrades as they settled sleepily into their stations at the beginning of the fateful morning watch of 4 July 1961. A blankly dreaming instrument panel spread before the commander's station. Arkhipov had just taken his post in the skipper's leatherette chair. Officer of the watch, commander of the ship while his superiors slumbered. An awesome honor and responsibility, as the political officer never tired of telling him. In front of him, Pustyev, the lieutenant in charge of propulsion, was slumped at his station in his spotless engineer's overalls, fighting sleep. "Pay attention, Pustyev," Arkhipov wanted to shout. "Wake up!" but his dream self remained relentlessly mute. Within hours, Arkhipov knew, Postjev's young face would be scorched scarlet, the skin peeling as if scalded. The lieutenant would be screaming, and Arkhipov would be trying to hold him down while the medic struggled to cut through the thick rubber of his thermal suit to get a morphine syringe into him.
"Wake up!"
The dream would always fall into a familiar groove. The intercom light from the reactor control room blinks on. Red. Something urgent. Arkhipov snatches up the telephone in the communications panel and presses a switch. "Sir, you'd better come, quickly." A rising edge of panic in the duty sergeant's voice. Arkhipov and Postjev sprint toward the reactor control center. The companionway is lit scarlet by red emergency lights spilling through the doorway. Yuri Postjev crouches forward, his face just inches from a dial labeled reactor coolant pressure. The needle is vibrating violently, almost at zero. As Arkhipov watches, the needle settles on its restraining peg and goes still. A klaxon sounds. Arkhipov feels a sickening tightness in his bowels. "Shit," says Postjev, glancing over to another panel. Swearing on board is strictly forbidden, for officers especially. Postjev looks over his shoulder and hisses to Arkhipov,
"Sir, we've lost coolant pressure. Both coolant pumps are out of action."
Before Arkhipov can reply, the whole control panel blossoms with scarlet warning lights. A large panel over the controls blinks on, illuminating the words "Safety Control Rods Activation Mechanism," SCRAM. The reactor is shutting itself down automatically. One by one, a few of the indicators go green. "Did it work?" Arkhipov asks. The lieutenant doesn't immediately respond as he swings from one instrument to the other, cursing as he goes.
"Postjev, is the reactor shut down?"
In reply, the young officer simply straightens, white-faced, and points at a large dial marked core temperature.
"Control rods are down. Reactor successfully scrammed, sir. But look."
The reactor's temperature is climbing perceptibly.
"Residual heat, sir. The core will keep cooking at low power for about 100 hours till it's finally burned out. Without coolant, it's going to melt down, burn through the hull."
"How long?" In the 4 minutes since Arkhipov has been in the reactor control room, the dial has moved from 250 to 325 degrees Celsius and is rising fast.
"Don't know, sir. A few hours."
Arkhipov hurries forward to the command deck. He struggles to keep his voice loud and steady. He sees his own fear reflected in the eyes of the men as they turn to him, the senior officer on the bridge. Eyes that will remain on him always. Back in fitful sleep, Arkhipov turned restlessly in his bed. Under closed lids, his eyes flickered and his fists clawed at the sheets as though he were desperately seeking to escape. But the bedding only wound itself closer around him, tight as a shroud. Morozov. Pioneers Ponds, Central Moscow, dawn, 4 July 1962. Under the windows of Colonel Oleg Morozov's apartment, the surface of Pioneer's Ponds spread like a black mirror. Up above the rooftops, a pearly gray was beginning to light the eastern sky. But down at water level, darkness lingered, disturbed only by the single cyclopean headlight of the first tram of the day as it rumbled down Malia Bronaya Street. In the apartment buildings that surrounded the park, one or two lights flicked on. Morozov's uniform tunic hung over the back of a chair. On the desk that faced the window were a metal table lamp
embossed with Soviet hammers and sickles. A copy of
Sample complete. Ready to continue?